Hi, this is Doug. Welcome to the podcast. I just wanted to warn you beforehand that this one does have some clips that contain adult language not normally heard here on the show. So fair warning, if either you're offended by such language yourself or if there are little ears nearby that shouldn't hear these words just yet. Just some fair warning. Other than that, enjoy the show. Welcome into the Anything Goes Wednesday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. I've been telling you for a while about our social medias, at Doug Russell Pod on both Instagram and Twitter. Of course, we're on Facebook and YouTube. Just search for the show, or you can email us at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. But I'd absolutely invite you to check out our new website. It's DougRussellPod.com, www.DougRussellPod.com. I don't know why this is, but for some reason, it seems as though you need to actually type in the www. And then DougRussellPod.com. I don't know why that is. I'll investigate that. But it seems as though that's what the key is to getting to our website, which is where all of our shows are. That's where our social media is. That is where we haven't done a video in a couple of weeks. I need to get on that. But that's where our videos are for our YouTube channel as well. So again, www.DougRussellPod.com. My guest today on this Anything Goes Wednesday is someone that I've known for almost 30 years, I guess. But he might be the quintessential, I know that guy. He's from that show in Hollywood. His name is Michael Patrick McGill, and he's been on just about every show that's ever been in production, or at least it seems like he has been. With 152 credits on his IMDb page, you might have seen him trash a bar with Pam's ex-fiance Roy on The Office.
Are they going to call the cops?
No, I paid him off.
Jet ski money?
All of it.
You may have seen him in a Cessna on Mad Men.
What are you doing?
That spot along 66, probably Claremont. Good spot for smoldering wreckage.
It's not funny!
Turn it back on this minute!
You might have seen him pull over Turtle and catch him with weed on Entourage.
Now it says your truck is registered to Vincent Chase.
Yeah, I'm sort of his driver. You a fan?
And if I throw you in jail, who's going to drive your movie star down to bail you out?
I don't know, sir, but please, just
get down on your knees.
What?
Down now! Flat on your stomach!
And for good measure, since he's played a cop a lot, you might have even seen him pull over Dr. Sheldon Cooper on The Big Bang Theory.
You know how fast you were going?
112.
Along the way, McGill has also made appearances on, among other shows, ER, The League, The Bold and the Beautiful, Days of Our Lives, Two and a Half Men, Desperate Housewives, Sons of Anarchy, Parks and Recreation, CSI, CSI Miami, Mike and Molly, Dexter, and over 100 others. The last decade, though, he's been lobbing one-liners at William H. Macy's Frank Gallagher on the Showtime series Shameless as Tommy at the Alibi Room.
Tommy! Hey, you still got that garage?
Yeah, it kind of comes with the house, Frank.
Great. What say you let me sleep there?
What say I don't?
Why the hell not?
Because the last time you stayed at my place, you shit in my kitchen sink.
The layout of your home is very confusing.
No, Frank. No means no.
Based on an adaptation of a British show with the same name, Shameless tells the story of the Gallagher family of the south side of Chicago. The Gallaghers, Frank, Fiona, Lip, Ian, Debbie, Carl, and Liam. And it also tells the story of everyone that intersects with them. The series is irreverent, to say the least. It's absurd and shocking sometimes, but it's also the longest-running scripted series by 3 years in Showtime history. This Sunday night, it will hold its 11th and final season premiere at 9 o'clock Wisconsin time. I first met Mike McGill at UW Oshkosh, where we were both in the radio TV film department as undergrads. We each had a different emphasis. I was headed into radio, he was headed to Hollywood, our common bond was sports. But every time I'm in LA, we make it a point to get back together and catch up. The day after Thanksgiving, this past week, I caught up with him over the phone.
You know, I'm a traditionalist. I like you know, turkey and ham and stuffing and potatoes and the jellied cranberry loaf. And since it was just me and my wife and my two sons, and of course nobody else in the family likes all that stuff, nobody will touch ham. The turkey, I like turkey, but I can't eat a 20-pound turkey all by myself. My wife made some lasagna, and we did have some homemade potatoes and gravy, but I was the one who ate most of that. So, but it was good. It was low key, and we watched the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving special afterwards. You know, for the complete Thanksgiving experience. I understand you have a tradition at your household that doesn't involve turkey.
The way that I look at it is that if you like turkey so much, you'd have it in March, or you'd have it in June, or you'd have it on a random Saturday night in July, maybe for July 4th, who knows? But nobody likes turkey that much. So it's been crammed down our throats since we were children, and you and I are about the same age. It's been crammed down our throats that you have to have turkey on Thanksgiving, and I think that's nonsense.
Well, believe me, man, I saw pictures of your homemade pizza. It looked delicious, so I'm assuming there are no leftovers. You guys tackled it in one sitting.
There are no leftovers anymore. You know what? Next time you're in town, next time you and Amy and the boys are in town, you swing by, and I will make you one.
It's a date. I'm already circling the calendar. Now if COVID will just let me come home.
Yeah, what is the? I read something yesterday that there's now a lockdown in Los Angeles County. How's that affecting you guys?
Well, right now it's the curfews from 10 p.m. to 5 or 6 a.m. I can barely stay awake to 10 p.m. Right now anyway, so that doesn't affect me so much. But they have discontinued. You were able to dine outdoors if it wasn't like an outdoor patio setting at a restaurant or a bar, and that has been 86th for the time being. So, and I believe, actually, I think Amy was just looking at some of the Safer at Home initiative things that start on Monday. So I'm probably not even up to date. Those are just the ones I know about, but plan on being a homebody for the rest of the year, at least around here.
2 years ago, Shameless became the longest scripted series in Showtime history. Why do you think it's had the staying power that it has?
I think the long and short of it could probably be Bill Macy. I just think the writers and the producers, they've tapped into a vein. I always tell people who haven't seen the show, it lives up to its title. You know, they take full advantage of the fact that they're on Showtime, and you get these scripts and you read them and they're just so ridiculous. They kind of have a half of a foot in reality, and then half of it is just like, I can't believe they're going to shoot this. And they do. And when you have pros like Bill Macy and the rest of the cast, they can somehow make the unbelievable, they can sell it, and you kind of be like, you know what, normally I wouldn't believe any of this, but somehow I buy it when he's going through it. And they just have the pulse on that kind of blue collar South Side mentality of the Midwest and Chicago, and you know, people just go for it, and you think, oh my goodness, somebody's gonna be up in arms about this storyline somewhere. But and I'm not an easily offended guy, but there's been times even I've read the scripts and I was like, ooh, they're gonna have a hard one putting that one off. But they do it, and here we are in season 11. So they got the formula down.
I remember when you first booked the show and you put something out on Facebook and you were kind of excited about, you know, the fact that it's a Showtime series. It's starring William H. Macy. It's starring Emmy Rossum. It's got great directors. It's got great writers. You couldn't have had any idea that it would have lasted as long as it had. But yeah, take me back to that first script when you first read what you were going to be performing on screen and what the actors around you were going to be performing on screen. I mean, what was that first reaction like?
Well, I had the audition. Amy was pregnant with who would become my older son, Jake, at the time. So he wasn't even born yet. And I auditioned for the first episode after the pilot. So they'd already shot pilot, I think, earlier that spring. And this was probably right around 10 years ago, give or take, at the time. I was probably, you know, maybe September of 2010. And I only had a couple of lines, you know, so I went in and read for it and thought it went well. And they, you know, it said it was going to be a recurring co-star role. Anybody who is an actor in Hollywood will tell you that whenever they dangle the recurring part, you think, oh my goodness, I'm, you know, this is going to be great. And then you end up doing one episode and then you're never heard from again. And so, I wasn't trying to take too much stock in it, but I went and did the audition and it felt pretty good. And then a week later, they wanted me to come back in and audition again for it. And I thought, do I really have to, you know, and I was kind of a little bit up on my high horse. Do I really have to come back for, you know, two or three lines? It's not that big of a deal. But in retrospect, I'm glad I ate a piece of humble pie and did go in, because when I did go in the second time, John Wells, who's the executive producer and director and the basically the showrunner of the series, he was at the callback. I think at the time, I think when I originally went into audition for it, since it was set in Chicago, I tried to sip with it up a little bit, put a little Dennis Franz on it and talk, you know, a little bit more with the Chicago accent. But then after I booked it, I thought, you know what? People always say I sound Midwest enough already. So I just, and Emmy Ross, I know was doing a much better Chicago accent than I could ever pull off. So I thought I'll let the regulars handle the Chicago accent, and I'll just sound Midwest enough to get in the bar and get a belly up to a bar stool.
Do you think it helped you that you're from Wisconsin and had already the Midwest accent? I mean, I think Emmy Rossum's from New York, if I'm not mistaken, and, you know, she's playing a Chicagoan.
Yeah. No, I guarantee you that it helped. I mean, John Levy is the casting director of Shameless, and he's kind of a tough office to get into in this town. And for whatever reason, I think I know the reason. Most of John Wells' shows are what he casts, and most of them are set in Chicago. So ER was set in Chicago. And a couple of his other shows. So I always kind of did well when I went in to audition for his shows. I probably had like a 50% booking ratio whenever I would go into his office. So I would look forward to going in and auditioning for John. And another show that John Wells works on right now is a TNT series called Animal Kingdom. And that's California Surfer Dudes. You know, that's a show that I'm not particularly right for. It's probably been on for five or six seasons now, and I haven't read for it yet because they don't need a big Midwestern sound pasty white guy trolling the beach in San Diego, you know, a beach whale. But
I don't believe that.
Yeah, but for the purposes of, you know, needing some blue collar guys who look and sound like they're from the Midwest, I fit the bill. So
it doesn't always paint Chicago in the best light in the world. Your wife Amy is from Chicago. How does she feel about the depiction of her hometown on your show?
Yeah, she's a big fan of the show. I think she likes it because it's the South Side of Chicago, and the South Side are Chicago White Sox fans, and that's what she is. She's a huge White Sox fan, and so, you know, whenever they rip on the Cubs or pump up the White Sox, I think she particularly gets a charge out of that. And of course, anytime they're talking about the Bears and the Bulls, she's a big Chicago sports fan. So any of that rivalry stuff that favors the Chicago sports teams on the show, she's all for it.
Have you filmed the entire season? Is production wrapped?
No, we're actually, I just filmed episode 7. We do 12 episode seasons, so this is our last season, and we're continuing to shoot season 7 this week and next week, and then we begin episode 8, and Shanola is actually directing episode 8, who plays V on the show. So that's exciting for her and for us. We're on the back half of the last season. I think we'll probably be done shooting sometime in mid to late February.
How has COVID affected the way that the show is shot, as far as, you know, what you have to go through on set, what you have to go through? I mean, you guys are all in very close proximity. How has that all changed?
Well, the big change, I'd say the biggest change, is all the interior stuff has always been done on sound stages at Warner Brothers Studios in Burbank. But the production would go 2 times a year, a week at a clip, to Chicago to shoot exterior scenes, you know, on the outside of the Gallagher House, or, you know, they want to catch Wrigley Field or the Sears Tower in the background. But this season, no trips to Chicago. And quite honestly, in the 11 seasons of the show, I went to Chicago once, because, you know, I'm usually always at the bar, which is always a sound stage. In season 3, they broke me out to help Frank dig up. He was like trying to dig up his aunt's bones in the backyard.
Good denizens of Cook County, I have a proposition.
What the fuck is it now, Frank? Jesus.
Do you remember the holdup of that jewelry store on South Ashland in 92?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Bastards cleaned out these poor spicks of every piece of crap that they had. That was my mother. She did the heist. And I think she buried the crap in my backyard.
How do you know that?
Well, she stashed it somewhere, and then she forgot where. So, the other day, I was planting some basil. I've recently gotten back into gardening, and I found this.
Shit, is that gold?
Could be. Pretty dirty, gotta get it appraised. The point being, this is only the tip of the golden iceberg. Now, I can't dig it all up by myself, so I will give a sizable cut to anyone who helps me unearth it. So who's with me?
Fuck it, why not?
So, I remember that one.
I got a chance. And actually, I bought a ticket, plane ticket for Amy, and Jake was not even two, so we all made a little family trip of it.
Jesus. Father Christ, it stinks. There's so much shit in the yard.
Shut up. Keep digging. The one-armed wonder's making more progress than you.
That's the only time I was at Chicago, was in Chicago for work. But, no Chicago. They built facsimiles of the houses. I'm not sure if they're on the lot. They have to be on the lot. Yeah, they're probably somewhere on the back lot, but. That was news to me. I wasn't aware of that until a couple of episodes in this season that they weren't going to Chicago at all. The other big thing for me is getting COVID tests 3 times a week whenever you're getting ready to shoot. So usually if I'm working that day, I will get a nasal swab first thing in the morning after we check in, and they're rapid tests. Luckily, so far, nobody's pulled me aside and said, hey, we need to talk. But I guess starting next week now, because the COVID numbers are spiking in the holidays, I think they're going to start testing us every day. So it just means I have to run over to Warner Brothers and get a Q-tip up each nostril for about 10 to 20 seconds, and then they send me on my merry way. But any time we're not shooting, like if it's between cut and the next action, our masks are on, and no bear hugs for Shinola, no high fives for Bill or Steve or Jim Hoffmaster, who plays Kermit. And we all just kind of have to watch it. We do elbow bumps and that kind of thing. But so it's a little bit different, but I think we're all trying to do our best because we all, of course, want to work and put out some new product for you guys.
Last couple of minutes with actor Michael Patrick McGill from the TV show Shameless. He plays Tommy. As they get set to launch their final season coming up on, Sunday, December 6th? Am I correct in that?
Yes, you are correct. And I just realized, and I forgot to mention that, if you do have Showtime, and I know a lot of people have kind of caught on to the show since it's landed on Netflix, but if you do have Showtime, they are rerunning the first 10 seasons, a season each day. It's marathons. So if you really want to hunker down and either get a refresher course or get indoctrinated, just throw on Showtime at some point over the next week and a half, and chances are we'll be up there.
Do you have a favorite season?
It's tough to say. I mean, I actually remember really liking season 9, which was Emmy's last season. I'd say, season 5 was kind of nice for me because that's when I got to break out of that bar and Lip came to work for me at the construction site, and I got a little more to do.
So here's what you're going to do. You're going to lift these large pieces of concrete, put them in the bucket of the bobcat, and you'll get some more while the bobcat dumps them in the Lolo.
I get to work the bobcat?
Okay. You're going to lift with your hands the large pieces of concrete and put them in the bucket of the bobcat, just like these assholes who don't speak English are doing. Then you're going to move out of the way while the bobcat, which has a licensed operator who is me and not you, dumps them in the Lolo. Then you're going to do it again for 8 hours. You're going to stop after 8 hours because I'm not paying your college ass overtime. You think you can handle that?
I think I'll manage.
All right. Amanda, huh? Nice tatas. Why don't you give me the phone?
Why would I do that?
Phones are a hazard on the work site. You're not going to sue me for workman's comp because you're distracted by a titty shot when a brick comes flying at your head.
Bricks are flying at my head now?
This ain't the alibi, bitch. You work for me, you do what I say. All right, andale, andale, arriba!
Yeah, it's tough, because actually I probably should watch these marathons to kind of refresh my memory. But I do remember a couple seasons ago, Dan Loria came on. He was Mo White. Frank was his campaign manager. And turned out he backed the wrong horse, but I like that character and I like that sequence of episodes. That was fun. I mean, this season's pretty fun too, but I mean, hey, I'm just happy to work. I like all the seasons, but you know, those are the ones that stick out in my mind when you just said that. But I'm sure I could go back and be like, oh, I like that episode, and that was, you know, a random episode from season three or something. But it's been fun. It's been nice because, you know, like the first few seasons, I mainly worked with Bill and Steve Howie, who plays Kev, the bartender over at the Alibi Room. But as the seasons have progressed, then they started bringing Shinola in to the bar, and they started kind of pairing me and Jim Hoffmaster, who plays Kermit, a lot into the bar. And then in those middle seasons, we had Svetlana, played by Isadora. Gorestra was great. And, you know, there's been more characters kind of in and out of the Alibi Room to interact with, which has been nice. We had Noel Fisher, who plays Mickey Milkovich, come in a few times, and I've gotten to work with Jeremy, who plays Lip, who's a fantastic actor.
What brings you here, College Boyd?
Why can't you get the details about the job?
Man, what job's that? Hey, get College a beer here, will you, V?
Demoing, you still doing that?
Yep, about to start a big cleanup. They knocked over Sunny Days on Halstead this morning.
Great, I'm in.
So, yeah, it's been nice. You know, the real treat is just getting a front row seat to watch Bill play Frank Gallagher. I mean, the character is such a rascal. And, you know, you read the scripts and you already know what he's going to say, but because Bill's such a pro and his delivery and timing are spot on, you know, you're having a hard time not breaking character and laughing anyways. So it's a really good role for him. I know he's won, and rightfully so, a handful of SAG awards for the role. I don't know if he's ever won an Emmy, and how Emmy Ross have never won an Emmy for her performance is something I'll never quite understand, but it really, really solid actors on the show.
A lot of fans want to know whether or not Emmy's going to come back for a final bow before the season is over.
I would love to know that as well.
But, okay. And if you did, you couldn't tell me, and if you told me, you'd have to kill me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, luckily, I don't know anything. I think people say, oh, man, you're like a series regular on that show, and this man, trust me, dude, I'm not in the inner circle. I'm not even in the outer circle. I get the script, and I show up the days I'm supposed to work, and I would assume that they've reached out to her to see if there's any interest. I would guess that she would be amenable to coming back. You know, they left the door open for her to come back, but who knows? Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to work with her all that much over the course of her tenure on Shameless because, you know, she'd come into the bar every once in a while, but usually would be interacting, you know, over by the pool table or, you know, we didn't have a lot of direct interaction, a couple episodes, and she directed a few episodes as well, so that was nice. But I know she's kind of moved on to producing and directing her own stuff with her husband Sam, who's the creator of Mr. Robot and Homecoming, that Amazon Prime show. But I would think, and I know actually she's doing a new show for the Peacock and the NBC streaming network Peacock, Angeline, the kind of infamous, she's a Hollywood staple, a gal in a pink Corvette who drives around town, and she's chesty like Morgana, the kissing bandit, and she has billboards all over town, and so I think that'll probably be a fun role for her, but I'm guessing, I think they wrapped that already, I'm not sure, but I would guess if she's available, she'll be out here, but if they do that, I don't think they're going to tell anybody. You know, they're going to keep it hush-hush and under wraps.
As they probably should. Because, yeah, the first
in this day and age, it's so hard to keep a secret, right? Like, if one person leaks it out on Twitter or something, and then it's over. So
I'm looking forward to the beginning of season 11. I'm not looking forward to it being over. But again, as you said on Showtime, you can binge a season a day. We would definitely encourage you to do that. And I love the show, but it's trippy to see my buddy play a role in that show as well. It's just an added bonus for me, but it's fun for me. It's fun for my wife, Erica. We love you guys. You know that. Continued success out in Los Angeles. Thank you so much for the time here on the show, and can't wait to do this again. Can't wait to see you in person when COVID will allow it.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, Doug. Always a pleasure.
From the television show Shameless, which will hold its season 11 premiere, its final season, that's coming up on Sunday night on Showtime at 9 o'clock Wisconsin time. Okay, we close out today's show with a coincidence. Now, if you were with us on Monday, you heard me play this highlight.
Bevel's got a scramble out of trouble. He's got a big opening at the 20. Bevel at the 15. Bevel at the 10. Bevel at the 5. Bevel's into the end zone! Darryl Bevel!
Now, the point of this clip wasn't to highlight the announcer, but rather Darrell Bevell, the former Wisconsin quarterback who's now the interim head coach of the Detroit Lions for the rest of the season. But I did mention at the end of this clip that this was the final game that Brian Manthe had ever called as the Wisconsin Badgers radio announcer, and that was true. What I didn't realize is that Brian Manthe, who's been in the corporate world for most of the last 20 years or so at We Energies as their spokesman, he was ready to retire. But my friend Lance Allen from TMJ4 did and actually ran a very nice piece on Tuesday night at the end of his sportscast on TMJ4 News about Brian Manthe. It's a hell of a coincidence, but I wanted to play Lance's piece about Brian. It was really well done, really nicely done, and I would echo many of the sentiments that Lance had about Brian.
We celebrate the career of one of the good guys in the media business. Brian Manthe is retiring from We Energies, but well before that, and when I first got to town, he worked with and was the voice of the Admirals. But his crowning achievement? The Badgers play-by-play voice for the 1993 Rose Bowl on January 1st, 1994. What I like to call the spark of Wisconsin sports renaissance and rise to prominence and respectability, just before the Packers and others got better, when people in this state were starving for a winner.
They'll stretch the play, give it to Moss. Moss cuts it in the middle. Moss cuts it into the end zone. Brent Moss with his first Rose Bowl touchdown, and the Badgers have taken the lead. 6-3.
When I think back about the WTMJ day, certainly it was the Rose Bowl year is such a highlight, and doing being able to broadcast that Rose Bowl game the first time they went in 31 years and to get the win was certainly phenomenal.
We still wait for the single touchdown. He's got six more.
But I certainly think back to all the great people that I worked with at WTMJ, and people are still there as part of either the TV or the radio side. Certainly Gene Miller was a good friend and someone that we certainly went back and forth, talked sports with every morning. Lance Allen was there certainly. A lot of great people that I worked with over the years.
As well as his other sports team he was associated with, the Admirals.
I had two different stints with the Admirals, and people like Phil Whitliff and Mike Wojciechowski, Wojo down there, and certainly John Greenberg, who's now the president there.
A great voice, but a well-earned and deserved retirement. Congrats, Brian. Lance Allen, TMJ4 Sports.
A really nice piece by TMJ4's Lance Allen on the retiring Brian Manthe, who truly is one of the good guys in broadcasting. Here's what I remember most about Brian Manthe. When I was an intern at WTMJ, I had already been in radio for a couple of years, but I was still a college student, and it was the summer of 1993. And Brian Manthe hosted what was then known as Brian Manthe Sports Talk, and it was on from 6 until 8 when there wasn't play-by-play, and it was the summer, so when there wasn't a Brewers game on, it was Brian Manthe doing the sports talk show that eventually Len Casper did, and then Bill Michaels did for a number of years, Greg Madsick, Jeff Falconio, Trenny Kuznarek did it for a little while. But Brian Manthe was the host of the show back when I was an intern in the early 1990s. And you have to remember that this was before the age of the internet, where you could just have a computer in front of you and look up whatever you needed to look up like that. So what Brian did before every show was he got this stack of media guides that had to be about 3 or 4 feet tall, and he would bring that stack of media guides into the WTMJ studio just to have every reference that he could possibly need during the course of his 2-hour show. Again, that's absurd now because we can all do that with the computer screens that are in front of us that are standard in every radio studio literally in the world. The other thing that struck me about Brian is that the WTMJ studio is what they call a sitting studio. You sit in front of a microphone, but he didn't want to sit. So he would take the microphone and he would take the mic stand, boom, and just bring it all the way up. And Brian's, around 6 feet tall or so. So he would take it as far up as he possibly could take it. He would prop one leg up on the desk, which was, standard sitting desk. So he'd prop one leg up on that, bend at the knee, and then broadcast his entire show that way. I have no idea how he contorted himself to do that, but that's how he broadcast his show back in the early 1990s. But he got smart and he got out of radio and he went into the corporate world and he got normal hours. And I think that for so many of us, that's kind of the quote unquote dream, if you will. But congratulations to Brian Manthe on a hell of a career. It spanned a couple of different iterations. Of course, he was at TMJ for a long time, as the piece with Lance Allen just mentioned. He was with the Admirals for a long time, as the piece mentioned. But also, again, for his final act, he's been at We Energies for, gosh, 10 or 15 years, and did a great job, interacted with him a couple of times when I was on Wisconsin's Morning News as well. So, congratulations to Brian Manthe. Also, thanks to Michael Patrick McGill. Don't forget to join him and the rest of the gang from the Alibi Room, as well as the Gallagher family on Shameless. That's on Showtime on Sunday night. Again, you can find us on our social medias. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Doug Russell Pod. Search for the Doug Russell Podcast on YouTube and on Facebook. You can always email the podcast at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. And of course, check out our website, www.DougRussellPod.com. Have a great rest of your week. We'll talk to you on Friday right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.